Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
Who's going first today?
Oh, good question. How long's yours?
I have no idea, because I wrote it on a different medium than normal.
Okay. We can do mine first.
Okay.
And then we'll do yours, because I feel like yours is going to be a little bit more chonky in the content than mine. But before we start, what are you drinking?
Smug-ass little smile, because she's the one that made the coffee this morning. I don't know. I am drinking unknown coffee in my I Love You to the Moon and Back coffee mug.
With caramel macchiato creamer.
Mm-hmm.
We're having, it's some kind of mix between Maxwell House and, I want to say, some kind of caramel coffee. I'm not really sure which brand it is. It's just been in our big mixing bag for, like, the longest fucking time. So I'm not even sure what we're drinking. So I'm smiling because we both don't know.
Okay.
But mine's black, and I'm drinking out of my Witch's Brew cauldron mug because I'm feeling a little witchy today. By little, I mean, like, very.
Okay.
Leah assisted me with my, I'd say, bi-weekly hair maintenance with the cut. But as far as the dye goes, I think it was, like, we do it, what, once every six
month.
Weeks?
Mm.
Month, 6 weeks. So my hair is teal-ish green. It looks like a blue ocean wave. It was like in the dark, deep Pacific. But it does this mohawk thing if I just add a little bit of water and try to like get it to go in a certain direction, it turns itself into a mohawk. So it's kind of cool. A little spunky today. So it's our grab bag week. Congratulations to making it to our second grab bag.
I don't know. It's like fourth.
No, it's gotta be our third. I'm sure it's our third because I did the Wendigo. And then I did Krampus.
One, two, three. You did Baba Yaga.
Oh, I did Baba Yaga.
Four.
It's our fourth?
Yes.
Wow, I am not with the times.
So what are you doing this week?
I don't know which one it was that I said, hey, I originally wanted to do Caribbean folklore, and I didn't feel like I was doing enough research on it, and I didn't want to disrespect it. So I finally came back to it.
That was last time.
That was last time, yeah. So, I finally came back to it, and I found a very specific mythological creature that actually may not be so mythological from my studies. And, yeah, so, without further ado, we're going to talk about the Chicchani.
Okay.
For this study, I watched a webinar from Birds Caribbean, who's been around since 1988. The webinar was on YouTube, and they do their best to preserve the birds of the Caribbean, essentially. The Caribbean Endemic Bird Festival is something that happens in the Caribbean from Earth Day until May 22nd. And anybody wondering what endemic means, it means what's normal for the area or the location. There is 171 species of birds nowhere else in that specific region in the Caribbean.
So there's 171 versions of birds there that are nowhere else in the world?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, that is the right word. So there was a virtual addition to the Caribbean Endemic Bird Festival done in 2020 because of the pandemic. And that's what got this webinar. So like each day of the week, they talked about some different topic. And my topic was one of the days that they covered. The 2020 version of this festival was called From the Nest, where they did an endemic bird each day. And in From the Nest, they were talking about from their homes because they weren't able to actually all show up in the Caribbean to talk about it.
That's cute.
Yeah. I thought it was really, really cute. The guy that did the whole presentation on the Chicchani, his name is Scott Johnson. He's a Bahamas National Trust field naturalist and scientist. Super cool. So to give a little background on the Caribbean, there's like thousands of islands and three sections of huge biodiversity. So what was I thought was also interesting is a lot of what was touched on is that in Caribbean folklore, while the European version of Once Upon a Time is a thing, their version was a good old time. And then there's another saying that goes with it, but I don't want to fuck it up, so I'm not going to say it. But I thought it was such a much better way of saying Once Upon a Time. It was a good old time. Like, that's fucking awesome. Okay, so the Andros is the largest island in the Bahamas, but the fifth largest in the Caribbean. Because
okay.
The Caribbean's, like, a lot bigger of an area.
Okay.
Okay? So, the Chicchani lives in Andros, for sure. Like, we know for a fact that it lives in Andros. and they build their nests in pine trees. What it has to be is, like, there has to be two pine trees that cross or fuse together. They have red eyes. They have the feet of a bird. They say they have a face of a man. Three-fingered hands, a tail, and they can turn your head completely around.
Hold up. Like, snap your neck, turn your head all the way around?
Yes. Yes.
That's not fun.
No. Now, they can actually bring you good or bad fortune to anyone, depending on how they're treated.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, here are a few stories of the Chicktarni. One man came across a baby Chicktarni that fell out its nest. So he assisted the Chicktarni and put it back in its nest. And then the next morning, he woke up to a Kong pearl, which is more valuable than an oyster pearl, at his front door. And that's to show, like, they can bring you good fortune, right? Now, the opposite happened in this other story where a family was walking through the forest and saw a pair of Chicktarnis building a nest. The child that was with them scoffed and laughed at the Chicktarni.
That was the first mistake.
And then they started throwing stuff at it.
No!
Yeah, at the birds. So the parents took the child home and told the child to never mistreat a Chicktarni. And instead of listening to the parents, the child went back on his own to pester the Chicktarni. But this time, the Chicktarni attacked the child and severely injured the child, causing them to walk around Andros with a permanent limp because their leg was so fucked up.
Well, that's what they get.
Exactly. So it was like kind of a cautionary tale. Don't fuck with these birds. They will fuck you up. Now, Alexander Wetmore, an American ornithologist that researched prehistoric birds, in 1937 he received a collection of bones from cave deposits in Little Exuma, with the bones sorted by a lady who was just kind of like going through the caves for fertilizer for her plants. He found remnants of crow, flicker, which is a woodpecker, and then he found three species, including one of a giant owl. And this is very important. Now, before we go into the whole owl thing, I want to give some facts about owls. There are over 209 species, and there's two families. There's the Titan-eyed, which is the barn owl, and the Strigidae, which is your typical owl that you normally see, like, flying around. Now, there's 9 native species in the Caribbean, 3 of which are rare slash vagrant, okay? Now, the Bahamian giant barn owl is the largest of the Taito in the world. It is 3 feet tall. And it's found in the Bahamas and Cuba, and it lived during the Quaternary period, including the Pleistocene and Holocene era. Yes.
That's a big bird.
That's a big fucking bird, okay? Now, remnants of this bird was found in Exuma, New Providence, Andros, Eleuthera, and Long Island in the Caribbean.
Okay.
Not New York City.
New York.
There is actually an island called Long Island in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And that's where they're found, and they're found around the Great Bahama Bank. Now, the sea level had dropped about 400 feet when they inhabited it. Back in the day, the climate was different. It was colder, and the sea level was dropped by a significant amount, so there was more land for them to inhabit. It was believed that they came from Cuba and set up shop there, and became an apex predator.
Yeah, because they didn't have any predators for them.
Right. So they lived with a number of animals that no longer inhabit the Bahamas. For example, the Cuban crocodile, the Hispaniola crossbill, the Bahamian tortoise, the Bahamian eagle, and the caracara.
Is the caracara the one you were telling me about that was the rodent?
No, this one, that was a bird.
Oh.
I'm about to tell you about the rodent. Now, they were believed to eat hutias that look similar to a rat. Now, I looked at the actual images. They look more like a groundhog to me, but that's just my personal opinion. They had a definite predator-prey relationship. But when the climate changed, the Bahamas grew warm and the sea levels rose, and the species dropped dramatically. So some stuck around, but many died. And the Bahamas lost 50 to 60% of its birds from this climate change. And the birds that lived that same time period as the Chicktarni owl include the red-shouldered hawk, the Cuban green woodpecker, and the Cuban crow, which I saw pictures of all of them and they're gorgeous. So basically what they're believing is that the Chicktarni was actually this giant fucking owl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that being said, there's a lot of other features to this owl that I didn't realize until I was like reading further into it. Now, of course, if you look at an owl in the middle of the night with a light, it'll look like red eyes beaming at you.
Right.
And that's why they believe that the red eye part was in that myth. I saw pictures of a Chicktarni nest from 2015 because the guy that did this presentation, Scott Johnson, he was giving a story about how he was just kind of like driving around and then he stopped because he saw something that looked like what was described as a Chicktarni nest. And that was back in 2015. He had his kids stay in the car. So he goes out and he looks at it and like the pictures, these pine trees are not small. They are fucking tall. And these nests are at the very tip top of it. So it's like, there's no branches really. And then you see this really dense part, right? And it's huge. And it was described that the owls used this fungus that grew on the pines and made giant clumps on the top to make their nests. So many do not agree, but there are beliefs that there can be still Chicktarni in the South Andros area that's mainly unexplored.
I was trying to look up what the fungus looked like, but it was just showing pictures of people's representation
of the Chicktarni. Yeah. So on another website, I found that there was a time when Andros Islanders were so wary of the Chicktarni that they carried bright colored flowers or pieces of cloth to charm them. And I found that on multiple websites. Mm-hmm. And dissuade them from attacking. I also found another story of a former prime minister of England. Now, when I say former prime minister, I mean he was a prime minister after this story happened. Between 1937 and 1940, he was a prime minister of England during World War II. But this story is from way before that, like in the 1890s. So his name was Neville Chamberlain. And every time I saw Chamberlain, I kept thinking Dark Crystal with the Skeksis, the guy that goes, let's not go there.
Okay.
Anyway, so this guy took over his father's plantation in the Bahamas, right? And upon arrival, he did a lot of cleaning the land, some of which were homes of Chicktarni. But also I found that he scoffed at the idea that Chicktarni even existed, and he was very open about that.
Mm.
And in response, it is said that the Chicktarni made sure that the plantation was a failure and a financial disaster. Now, by that, it was a financial disaster, and what that means is that it cost their family £50,000 back then. It equates to £4.2 million today, is the financial loss of this plantation. Now, the fossils found of the owl were deemed to be possibly the Chicktarni are flightless. So it's said that they use their long tails that they have to get up on these trees.
Hmm.
And to get down, like, kind of like a monkey. But also, they have, like, their legs and they have actual, like, hands with
grippy hands.
So it's like, they are definitely a different breed of owl, for sure. Tito Pollens were said to have tails that helped with getting them up high places, for example, the pine tree nests. I mean, I already obviously talked about it. But I had never heard of Chicktarni until I, like, was looking into this mythology, and I thought they were really cool because as long as you're respectful, they're actually pretty decent to, like, live around, but you don't fuck with them. Mm. Like, you don't mess with them, don't anger them, don't make fun of them, just don't do it. And you're fine. And I like owls, so.
Owls are pretty cool.
Owls are pretty fucking cool. And it is also said in the mythology that the Chicktarni are able to move their heads 360. Not just, like, break somebody's head 360. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense for it to be an owl.
Right. That is definitely something we see all the time in owl.
Owl stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, every time I saw Taito, I kept on thinking of Legends of the Guardians of Ga'Hoole.
Okay, so that was the owl movie, right?
Yeah, that was the owl movie.
I saw that once, and I don't really remember it. I just remember being, like, super scarred by it, and was, like, never gonna watch it again. Was it sad? Because I have that reaction to sad movies most of the time.
There were some sad bits, okay. But it was real. I really loved that film. I loved how they animated it. To me, it was like watching a 3D animated owl version of Lord of the Rings.
That sounds epic.
It was epically done. However, I also feel like there's a lot more that's supposed to happen in that series that they just never came out with because it's a whole book series that it's based off of.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the whole thing with the Chicktarni. A lot of the scientists there do not believe that they exist anymore. They believe mm-hmm. they are extinct. However, the guy doing that presentation was stating that there are enough parts of the islands that people do not go near because it's so heavily dense with forestry and stuff that he believes it's definitely possible, but that this species is still around.
Is that the one where you were telling me he was, like, stay in the car and he climbed up to the nest and he saw that there were, like, actually owl pellets up there and stuff?
So he didn't climb up the nest. He went to the base of the tree and found all the owl pellets underneath.
Oh, okay.
Showing that there wasn't, that was an owl's nest underneath it.
Recently.
Recent. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, with all the different scrappings of these different things. I mean, owl pellets are kind of nasty, but I still think they're kind of cool at the same time. When I was in the fifth grade in California, you had to go on a natural science field trip. By having to, I mean, like, they had you do a whole thing to, like, get the money to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you took this charter bus up into the mountains, and you stayed in these log cabins. And we got to go on these nature hikes. We met different, like, animals from the area for by preservationists. And one of the things we got to see was an owl, and it was so fucking cool. But the guy was like, you don't fuck with owls. Like, they will kick your ass. But you can be very respectful of owls, and they're super pretty. And I agree. They are very gorgeous.
When I was trying to find the picture of, to see what kind of fungus they use in these nests, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was just bringing up pictures of people's renditions of the Chicktarni period.
Let me.
And what I was seeing was, it looked like they had really long legs.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen an owl skeleton, you know they do have, like, that really long-legged part. You just don't see it because of how, like, their feathered part of their body covers it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just made me think of, like, maybe one of those standing all the way up so you could see the long legs.
Let me see if I can just show you that part.
Oh, how it's really dense up there?
Yeah, so, like, you can see how there's the different parts that aren't very clumped together, but that's, like, obviously clumped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fungus that they use. And then he has the pellets in his hands right here in these pictures. Out of respect for the fact that this is coming from a foundation and they're mm-hmm. trying to preserve their birds, I would just say to go and look up The Truth About the Chicktarni on YouTube. And it's by the Birds Caribbean channel. There's only, like, 216 subscribers to this channel, but, like, I thought it was worth a gander. They mm-hmm. have a lot of cool information on there. It's actually a webinar all for educational and preservation purposes, and I thought it was really cool. So
nice.
That's the Chicktarni.
You know what Big Owl makes me think of?
What?
The one from Avatar that's in the library.
Yes. That's the other thing I wanted to talk about. Was like, that's what it kind of made me think of when I was, like, looking up the Chicktarni. I was like, oh my god, it makes me think of the Great Owl of Knowledge from the big giant fucking library in Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Yeah. It's like, as long as you're respectful, he's fine. And then as soon as they piss him off, he's like, we're taking the entire place down with you inside it.
Yeah, like, it's we're gonna sink into the fucking sand, and you're all going to die. And that's it. And that's the Chicktarni.
I love owls.
I do too. I absolutely love owls. They're definitely a bird I enjoy to look at and be like, oh, they're beautiful from a distance. We are going to take a short break, and we will be right back with... What are you going to talk about?
Mami Wata.
Mami Wata. I'm very excited. All right, let's go.
And we're back.
Woohoo!
Want to add, unless we specifically say it's an ad, anything we talk about is not a sponsored thing. It's just something we find out that's cool.
Yeah, like, we're genuinely, like, we like this product, we use this product, or we like these people, they have good things, please go check them out if you're interested. Our listenership, according to Anchor, isn't super huge, but anybody listening to us, thank you so much.
We do appreciate you. So, I believe a coworker of Eliza's is the one that requested this being, yeah?
Yes, Patrice.
She's cool with shout out?
I think she is. She does. Hold up. I'm going to shout out her store really quick because I think free advertisement for her is well deserved. She's given me a few different ideas along the way. So she does crystal wrapping. It's N as in the letter N, Charge Crystal Jewelry from Baltimore.
Sweet. Thanks so much, Patrice, for this idea.
Yep. She charges her crystals in the sunlight.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited to talk about this. Her name is Mami Wata, spelled M-A-M-I space W-A-T-A, or also known as Mother Water. A quick search will tell you that her name is from West African Pidgin English, and we're going to take the detour I took while researching because language is super cool. A pidgin language is one that develops when two or more groups of people need to communicate and they don't share a common language.
Really?
Mm-hmm. What happens is these groups of people end up creating a really basic language. And some of these languages have as few as 700 words to aid in the communication between the two groups. A lot of these happen when they're trying to facilitate trade. So in this case, it would be a mix of West African Niger-Congo languages and English. The not super cool part about it, this one in particular, is because it has a history of being made because British and African slave traders needed to communicate in order to trade their enslaved peoples.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. But not all pidgin languages have such dark roots. So, for example, Chinook jargon is a pidgin that evolved between Native Americans and Europeans in the Pacific Northwest. And that language was picked up by traders, trappers, pioneers, and missionaries.
Hmm.
So think of pidgin languages as a first-generation new language. Once those first-generation people start having kids, and those kids grow up with it as one of their native languages, they start to fill in the gaps that were left by their parents. So they add better grammar and more words until it becomes a Creole. And what's cool about this was I didn't know pidgins or Creoles were a type of languages. I'd only ever heard of one pidgin, and I only knew of one Creole, the Creole from Louisiana that has the French base.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, that was like saying, this is English, French, or Spanish.
Right.
And it was the name of the language, but it's not that. It's a whole type of language that can be found anywhere in the world and not just Louisiana.
What?
So one, I just loved learning that. That was really super cool. And then the other cool thing about it is that this can be witnessed in a lifetime. It only takes a generation or two of people to watch a pidgin turn into a Creole.
Wow.
And that's utterly fascinating to me.
Well, what's throwing me off is that when I live in Hawaii, mm-hmm. they literally call like, okay, we're going to speak pidgin.
They
like,
have one in Hawaii too.
Yeah. So I'm like, is that pidgin or is that a Creole? Like, I'm very confused now because it's like multiple generations of people speaking pidgin.
So I went down a bunny hole.
Okay, thank you.
As you can see. By what I've already said. But yes, a language will start off as a pidgin and turn into a Creole. So I believe that when I was looking it up and I saw the one for Hawaii, it did say that is now officially a Creole.
Okay, that makes way more sense.
And what I was reading about the Hawaiian pidgin is that, yes, I'm looking it up now. It is officially a Creole. It has 600,000 native speakers and 400,000 who speak it as a second language.
Oh, snap.
Which is, like, a large number of people.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I was on, because, like, I would bunny hole. Like, I'm not even talking about something from Hawaii, and I ended up on Hawaiian pidgin. It was saying that you'll actually see Hawaiian pidgin used in advertisements that are aimed directly at the natives.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, that was neat.
I miss Hawaii food. I'm sorry. I got on a big bunny trail with that. So, let's go back to the topic at hand.
Gonna make me start thinking about Matsumoto's shaved ice
and
Manapua.
Oh gods, I am not in a good place right now. Moment of silence. Okay, moment done. Let's go.
So after a deeper dive into the interwebs, I found that it's possible the name Mamiwata doesn't come from a pidgin language at all, but comes from the Egyptian mama, meaning truth or wisdom, and a corruption of the Egyptian word spelled U-A-T-I, which means ocean water, which makes sense because she is a water deity.
Mm.
So this name appears to cover not only a singular deity, but also a group of spirits, and they are not solely female, although in our minds we may assume that due to the name of Mami.
Mm.
So in singular, Mamiwata is a water goddess full of duality, as water is both life-giving and life-taking. She can be protective and destructive. She can be beautiful and dangerous. She may be asked for help in sexual matters or money matters. She's often depicted as a mermaid with the head and nude torso of a woman and the lower half of a fish, another example of her duality. Other times she's depicted with snakes draped around her neck and arms in a full female form. And sometimes she has both fishtail, and snakes. She's been portrayed in many art mediums, from old wood carvings that we've found to digital art from now.
Cool.
But there are themes that follow her as she moves from piece to piece. Many times she's shown with pearls, jewels, precious metals, or she might be holding a mirror. On top of this, there are times when Mami Watas refer to many water spirits, both male and female, throughout Africa. This becomes a general grouping of spirits that have individual names and personalities depending on specific location, at which point each spirit would have its own description based on local beliefs.
Oh, okay, cool.
Her devotees may request her aid in obtaining status, wealth, their dreams or good fortune. They may ask her to cure infertility, impotence, physical ills, spiritual ills, or infant mortality. She embodies all of these good features, but she also has risk, challenges, and fears that may be attributed to her. Tangling with her may result in having to sacrifice family or sex, so she is not one to take lightly.
Oh, shit.
As always with deities, be respectful and tread cautiously. She has priestesses and healers that are initiated to her and work for her, and she is venerated in religions such as Haitian Vodou, West African Vodun, and Louisiana Voodoo, among others. As enslaved Africans were brought across the Atlantic, they brought their beliefs, stories, and cultures with them. Some say that she was reimagined as they met the culture of the places they were brought to, that La Sirène, Ashun, and Yemoja are just some iterations of Mami Wata. In some tales, she takes people away to her realm, which is sometimes under the sea and sometimes like in a completely separate spirit world. And she does not always return them.
Fair.
But when she does let them go, they become more attractive and wealthier after their return.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Other tales tell of a woman that seduces men only to later reveal her true nature as Mami Wata. Then she will demand he be sexually faithful to only her and keep their bargain a secret. In return, he gains fortune. But if he declines, he will lose everything, his job, his money, and his family.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. There are shrines that are devoted to her. They may be decorated in red and white, have images of her, and have bells, incense, dolls, and carvings left for her. Followers in Nigeria dress in red and white clothing to represent her dual nature, and offerings would be given to her in the form of food and drink, alcohol, scented items, and jewelry. If we take into account all the versions of Mami Wata that moved with her people across the globe, there are people all over that worship her. From Africa to South America, up to the islands of the Caribbean, and even up into North America. As we say, these days she can be found in art and written works, but what I found by accident while researching was that there's this surf company called Mami Wata. The owners were walking on the beach one day, looking at the growing surf scene in Africa, and realized that everyone there was using boards and gear made from other countries. And they wanted to make a unique African surf culture where the boards and the gear was made there for their people by their people so that jobs and money stayed in their community. Plus, the growing scene would help bring tourists to their beaches and towns. So they made this company. And then when the panorama happened, they decided that they would put all of their profits back into the community instead of only the percentage that they were already giving. And they did this because they realized how bad off their community was and how little help they were receiving from, like, the government and other places.
Oh my gosh.
So it's really amazing what these guys have built. And I was extra excited to tell you about this.
I was actually pretty ecstatic to hear about it because I was like, oh, surfing!
She's a surfer. And another thing they do is they support a therapy group called Waves for Change, which uses surfing as a form of therapy.
Surfing is therapeutic.
Yeah.
There's nothing like catching a wave and then having your hand brushing up against it as you're going along its face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. So I thought they were like a super cool company when I ran across them during, you know, all of this. And obviously, this is only some of the information of Mamiwata. As her high priest, Behumbeza, has said, true knowledge and understanding of Mamiwata is shared with those initiated into the priesthood of Mami and with those who hear the calling for initiation into her mysteries. As lay people, we will never know all there is to know about this great water goddess, and that's okay.
Yes, that is perfectly fine.
So, this was an amazing topic to read about. The art is beautiful from all of its iterations. So thanks again, Patrice, for giving us this data to research. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. So that was our lovely trip into
the Caribbean.
The Caribbean slash, what you like, West African is what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good preparation for the summer times. I don't know about you guys, but over here it's hot. I don't like it. It's like end of May and 100 degrees outside. And we're in Maryland, not in Texas or Arizona. And I'm just like, what the fuck's happening with May? Because in the beginning there was snow and now there's like sweltering heat waves.
And humidity.
And humidity to add to it.
It'll kill you. So if you're in a place that's hot, please take care of yourself.
Please do.
Stay hydrated.
Yes.
Reapply your sunscreen.
If you have a cold treat that you normally eat, of course, please take pleasure in it, like watermelon or popsicles or, in our case, ice cream. There's a place here in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area region, called Be More Licks. You can only get it in the city. But I love their ice cream because they make all the different flavors of soft served and until...
Like as you order it.
As you order it. So like I can order... I get this thing called the Shark Bite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's raspberry, I believe, mm-hmm. with white chocolate chunks in it. And it's just so good. And then I'll get a waffle cone and I'll have it dipped in white chocolate with cotton candy...
Crunchies
on it. Is it diabetes in a cone? Probably. But you know what? I can indulge myself every once in a while.
It is delicious.
It is delicious. And it melts fast. So you have to eat it.
Yeah. And then what? I get the...
Black Forest.
Yeah. It's like a chocolate cherry flavored ice cream with the chocolate dip, hard dip top on it.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And she normally gets it in a cup, but sometimes she'll get it in a cone if she's feeling extra spunky.
Yeah. I like waffle cones, but it melts so fast and I can't eat something faster. It'll make me sick. So I have to like eat it slowly.
And then the other thing is that they make stuff for dogs too. So if you if you got your pup with you, you can get a pup cup and they have like small and big versions. The small version is just like a vanilla ice cream, dog friendly with a little milk bone inside. And then the bigger one's got peanut butter drizzled all top over it with two of the milk bones inside.
Yes. Super dog friendly. Their building is beautiful. This is not sponsored, by the way. This is just a place we love that's like...
Like, there needs to be more of these around. Like, I want this to go better. So if anybody's listening and anybody's visiting on the East Coast of the United States and they go to Baltimore, give that place a check out because it's literally across the street from a beautiful park that you can go walking in while you're eating this ice cream. And there's a beautiful... coffee shop called the Patterson Perk right across the street from it that has awesome coffee. So,
yeah,
get your coffee and your sugar on. You know what I'm saying?
And the whole outside of Be More Licks building is...
very colorful.
And has, like, ice cream cones painted in all the different flavors they have. So.
Yes. We're talking about it and it's making me, like...
I know. We're gonna have to go get it later.
Yeah. Anyway, outside of all that... Before I do that, okay. I want to say thank you to Lulu's Handmade Homes. That's her name on Instagram. Wherever she found us, she just, like, blew our stuff up with, like, listening to all of our episodes. And then was giving us, like, stuff on Kitsune books. And I'm, like, super ecstatic about it. So, thank you for listening and thank you for, like...
Suggestions. For reading material.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. We're not sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
But I want good things for that person. Good vibes. Good vibes out there. Anyway, without further ado.
Reminders, everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own of these beings, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of a name or handle. or if you'd like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos, where you can message us as well. And remember, those requests don't have to just be for the grab bag. If there's something you are interested in and something we normally cover, we will do it for that week. If you're interested in something outside of what we normally cover, it will go in the next grab bag.
Yes. Thank you so much, and check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffee-table-mythos, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffee-table-mythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.